I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Today's program is brought to you by the Academy Opus Cassius, the cheese industry's unique center for professional development. For more information and to apply for courses, visit our website at www.academymons.com. That's academie-mons.com.
I'm Erin Fairbanks, host of The Farm Report. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
There are those of us who are career cheesemongers, who ride the retail cycles year after year, helping thousands upon thousands of customers and dealing with the day-to-day madness of taking care of and moving the cheese. And oh, do we move the cheese. And then there are those in the cheese business who started off as cheesemongers in the hopes of building a career in cheese that extends beyond the counter. We love them, too. Welcome to Cutting the Curd, broadcasting live on the Heritage Radio Network. This is Lifer Cheesemonger and your host, Greg Blaze. On today's show, we're talking about building a career beyond the counter with Will Imre, Sales and Development Manager at Pondini, which is a distributor of organic cheeses and other specialty goods. Thanks so much for coming on the show today, Will.
Hey, Greg. How's it going? Thanks for having me, man.
You bet, dude. Always good to talk to you.
On the
first half of the show, I wanted to focus on your cheesemongering career. And on the second, we could talk a little more about how you came to your current role. I'd love it if you started off by telling us a little bit about your career before cheese and why you made the switch to cheesemongering. What's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, basically, I was like any old guy, out of high school, went to college, did something that I didn't really want to do. And then I decided to kind of follow a passion of mine, food, and I think I had three life experiences that kind of really fostered that that passion, and that was my family and cultural background. My dad was from Hungary, originally from Budapest, and my stepmother was from a little town called Gravina in southern Italy. So I think out of the three things, you know, that was probably most important. I also didn't like corporate working environments, and I did have a brief stint in food industry, so that helped as well. But my familial background was great. It was just, you know, experience all these unique things, cheeses in particular, provolones, imported Parmigiano Reggianos and things of that nature in the early 90s and 2000s, that when cheese wasn't really, you know, a big thing, I think, in the marketplace.
Right. What did you study in college that you hated so much?
Well, I hated a portion of it. It was an interdisciplinary study called Environmental and Business Economics, and the economic portion was something that I really didn't like. I love the environment. I was in a quasi-ag program as well, so I learned about, you know, conventional agricultural practices. That also kind of got me into food, because I was like, wow, we're like, you know, doing all the wrong things, using pesticides and herbicides and, you know, having terrible feedlot conditions for these animals, and what's going on here, and we're eating all this processed food. So kind of that also helped me kind of, go in another direction with food.
Well, would you say that your college education, you know, gave you a lot of information, but maybe it didn't give you a path to apply that information? Maybe you found that in cheese a little bit. I know I did when I went to school, and economics are important. I mean, shit, your whole business, especially as a wholesaler, relies on economics, and all those margins are pretty slim. And I imagine you wouldn't be as good at it as you are if you didn't do that firsthand, or at least learn about economics somewhere, wouldn't you say?
Oh, I agree 110%. I mean, it's completely applicable, the theories, the information that I acquired during my time there. And I was happy to find something I was passionate about and then apply that knowledge to it. And I think that was, it took a little time to kind of, realize that or come to the realization that I think food was my direction and cheese in particular. But I got there and it was a good journey. You know, my food experiences were unique. You know, every time I always pressed, you know, I was like, all right, well, I got my first car. We're going to go down to Arthur Avenue in the Bronx. We're going to go to, you know, Mike's Deli, sure. Casa della Mozzarella, you know, Titel Brothers, you know, and all this stuff and get weird cheeses like Ragusano and that you never even heard of and Italy wasn't, you know, didn't exist. You know?
Sure.
So it was like, I think that it was also the discovery of things that fueled that passion, you know, and continues to do that to this day, you know.
And that's why. So you went from food, but then you made the switch to cheese. Maybe cheese gave you a little bit more to sink your teeth into, right?
I think so. I think the food industry was kind of, so I owned my own business for a little bit, which again, I applied my college background to, and I love cooking. So I did, I worked for a lot of catering outfits in Manhattan.
Yeah.
Where I learned kind of the practical skills involved in cuisine and in the food industry. And then I found myself owning my own business for a brief stint and,
tough.
I was sourcing cheeses at that time for the business, a lot of stuff from like Springbrook Farm. I used some distributors like Seacrest Foods, et cetera. And, that kind of just intrigued me, where these cheeses were coming from, especially them being predominantly domestic cheeses. That was my focus. And that's where I could really sink my teeth into it. And then I was also, I really, one of the guys that really helped me out was Everett Priestley, man. You know, he was over.
Who?
You know, he works for,
I'm sorry. Could you tell me
another,
if that gentleman's
another distributor
name
right now? But Everett was a monger.
Oh, Everett.
At,
I'm sorry.
A small shop in Jersey. And he was like totally helped me out and tested my palate and things like that.
Totally.
So, it's cool.
That's awesome. So you got in and then you broke in through that, or that was when you made your choice. Where were you? You were at the wine library, right? Is that what you said? Or?
Yeah, I was at the wine library in Springfield, New Jersey, and, for a brief stint, a couple months. And then I decided to kind of go to the big time. And as you know, I applied at Eataly.
Yeah, you worked with me at Eataly, and your life has been ruined ever since. It's been over for you.
Yeah. Well, you always tell me the story about how I came to the counter in a suit and tie. And
yeah, that was
like,
funny.
This kid is never going to make it.
Well, you know, you grew your hair out and beard just as quick as you possibly could get out of that thing. So I was happy to see that. That's good. That's good stuff. But in a serious way, do you have any tips like for people listening, who might not work in cheese yet, but are considering like sort of dropping everything to become a cheesemonger? What would you say to them?
You got to work hard. I think that's very important. You know, your work ethic is extremely important. You have to make monetary sacrifices, if you want to call it that. You're not going to get paid that much, and you're going to get paid probably better than in most food industry jobs starting out.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there is some sacrifice there, and then I think it's the personal sacrifice too. I think because of that, you're going to work long hours, you're not going to have a lot of time for yourself. And that all goes with the work ethic. And I think if you have that passion, it's going to fuel those things,
So you got to give up your time,
kind of do what you
and you're not going to make any money. So thanks a lot for advertising that. Really, you're really, I'm the holiday season and I need people to come sell cheese. So please come work for me. You won't make any money and I'll take all your time. Awesome. Thanks, Will. Really appreciate that. No problem. No problem. Awesome.
Time, huh?
Thanks, buddy. So what did you learn through mongering and how did that help you in your current career?
Yeah, I mean, a lot. I mean, wow, I think cheese knowledge just in general. I mean, you know, at Eataly, what do we have, 200, 300 different cheeses?
Yeah, we had a lot of cheese.
At any given time. You know, I think that alone, just tasting them, smelling them, you know, selling them to people, learning descriptors, things of that nature, I think are invaluable. And in this industry, you need to have that, you know, and that was one of the best experiences I had at Eataly. I mean, it was just the variety of cheeses that I was introduced to. I think it was great.
Yeah, it gives you a real big, broad stretch. You know what I mean? You get to taste a lot of stuff there or in any large counter, you know, like not only there. But I think that mongering, when you are there, you get to sort of gravitate towards the items and the things that you like the most. And you have a lot to choose from. People who run cheese counters are seldom, we usually go overboard. People like a lot of different kinds of cheese. So mongering definitely shows you that. And it definitely helped you out to stay in touch, you know, because you had a lot of cheese that you might not have now, but you remember it then. What do you miss most about the cheesemongering that you don't get in this current role? You do wholesale. You're on the phone a lot, I'm sure, and you go out and you have a small amount of cheese that you handle. But what do you miss about the counter, if anything?
Yeah, well, I do. Well, I mean, I don't miss people yelling at me, but, you know, in ordering me around. But, you know, that's the customer.
You say in ordering me around?
Yeah.
Well, you yelled at them and you ordered them around too. So, I mean, fair is fair.
Yeah. Oh, that's great, man. But what I do miss is those new cheese experiences, like we were previously discussing.
Yeah.
I mean, I think those for me were just awesome. I mean, there's nothing like this. Again, I think it all goes back to discovery, and it's like this intrinsic nature we have, you know, and if you're really passionate about something, you just want to continue to discover and learn. And I think those cheese experiences of, like, you ordering this awesome cheese, I don't know, like Toma Bethelmont that I've never, ever heard before, and then getting it in and then selling the you-know-what out of it.
Yeah.
You know, I think that was most exciting for me. And then in my new role now, it's like, you know, I think it's more controlled and calculated. You know, we bring new cheeses in. I mean, we just brought in a bunch of new American producers, but we have to do so in a more controlled and calculated way. Not to say that your way isn't controlled and calculated as well, but I think there's more room. I think for our business, we're kind of more focused. We're a little bit more niche, us being, you know, focusing on organic specialty. And we don't want to have a line of like 250 cheeses, 300 cheeses. We want to keep it small and controlled. So I think that's kind of what I miss the most. But yeah, I mean, I also think working with a team, you know, and working to get things accomplished as a team. You know, I work with Seymour and myself. It's just the two of us right now, so it's a very small company. I do have a warehouse team that's awesome, but just coming in with your coworkers every day and everyone loving the product and cheese and working towards a goal and then achieving that goal is something so awesome. So those are the two things I think I really miss the most behind the counter.
Yeah, definitely you learn a lot as a cheesemonger about teamwork. And you always sort of have, at a busy counter, you have sort of a rotating cast of characters because people come because of all the things you mentioned before, like people come into cheesemongering and then they find out that they can't support themselves through it, or they have other costs, or their time, different demands get met in their time, or they want to change the demands of men or their time. So you have all this sort of mix of people. You have the core group, and then you have other people coming and going. And some of them are challenging to work with. They're challenging to manage and be a part of. So I think that you learn a lot. And your interactions as a cheesemonger with your other cheesemongers is different in a retail capacity, or it has been, where in the places I work, because you kind of like want to encourage some sort of banter, you know. There's no you're not pointing to a menu, you know, and saying you can have one of these five things. You have to really coax the money out of people, and you have to encourage them to buy things. So you end up talking to your teammates all the time, too, because it gets you sort of in the vein of being up to sell things. And I think that it's a lot easier to do that at the counter than when you're a wholesaler. And I know this from experience, when you're like, you know, you're kind of jazzed about something, but you're still just on the phone with somebody. You know what I mean? Like, you're just like, you know, they can't smell it. They can't see it. They can't touch it or taste it, you know, and that's the difference. You know, I was going to ask you, you know, about some skills from your other jobs, and I still want to ask you that. But something that you mentioned to me that I found really interesting, one of the main reasons for your coming to sell cheese or your interest in food in general, you said was your family, your roots in Hungary and Italy. You know, through cheesemongering and working with cheese, did you find out more about your family through that?
I kind of did. I mean, you know, it's odd. I mean, at least in Budapest, you know, my father left when he was very young. You know, he was under the Soviet era, you know, but they were very poor, you know. So if I, you know, and I think my stepmother was the same, you know, she left at a younger age, you know, 18 to 20 years old. And both of them were extremely poor, coming from poor conditions, in really difficult economic and political times in both countries. So I think what I learned the most about them about food was the simplicity of it. You know, I mean, I think, you know, they never, you know, they basically, they had to eat what was around them, you know, I mean, and that was very important. So it was all about the locality of things, about what was available, you know, what was obviously least expensive, et cetera. But the simplicity of it, I think, was key. And cheese, yet it is a complex thing. It's very simple. You know, if you're not eating Cheese Whiz or Kraft mac and cheese, you know, there's not a lot of additives. You know, it's simple. It's fluid milk. It's a little rennet, a little salt, and you're done, you know, basically. So I think it did kind of lead me in that direction, and it was always something on the table. You know, it's a form of sustenance. You know, I mean, it was something that they had in their countries that they ate fresh or aged. So I think, I did learn a little bit about them? Yeah, I did. I learned, you know, what conditions, what kind of environment they came from, why they wanted to leave, you know, why they wanted to have new experiences, et cetera. And then bring those here to kind of pass on to someone else. So, but in a better environment. I did learn a lot about them. I think I'm continuing to learn about them, which is great. I think going from there, I agree. I mean, I think you will learn more about your family if you can connect with them in food, especially if they're from other countries.
Sure.
You know? Well, that's great.
I think, I think that people have a very romantic notion of what their grandparents had, you know, in what we would call the old country. And when you work with food, you realize when you pull that veil of romance away, you realize why people eat what they eat. And I think that only people that work with food really, really understand that. And then people who work with cheese have an interesting sort of bent on that whole thing, because you see what cheese actually is, which is, you know, the milk in the earth working to preserve itself, you know, to give us the sustenance in time of need. And I think the further back along the line you go in your own family, if cheese or food were part of your family, you run into that need much more so than today, where we love cheese because we want it and we can have it. I want to go to a break in a second, but I wanted to ask you. No, you definitely were a good cheesemonger. Loved having you back there and selling cheese with you. What was your most challenging time working behind the cheese counter? You know, when you were really like, you know, this is.
Well, you got to call the most challenging time I had.
Oh, really? So many people call me to complain. I forget about it.
Christmas Eve, I believe it was.
Well, why was that so hard for you?
You know, the conflict in the workplace, I think, you know, when, as you previously discussed about, you know, kind of handling everything you need to handle, doing a lot of multitasking at once, and then having that kind of, you know, obviously camaraderie with, you know, with your staff and learning to kind of work with them in the least stressful manner, I think that was most challenging, you know, and there were some experience I did have behind that counter. albeit with, you know, with my coworkers, which I probably could have handled a little better, you know, and I think both parties could have, you know,
but, water under
but
the
these
bridge.
Things happen, you know,
whatever, yeah, dude, you know, it's all in a day slinging cheese. What was the most fun you had?
Oh, the most fun. It's that same day. It's ironic, right? Because I think we broke the sales record in the shop, and that was kind of like one of my, that's a big accomplishment, you know? We just all had beer afterwards.
Nice.
We just all, you know, had this like Christmas Eve celebration together, and it was probably one of the best times I had there.
So you came around full circle all in one day. Love and hate.
I know. You got to love me, right?
The life of a cheesemonger. You're for real. All right. We're going to take a little bit of break, and then after we're going to talk to Will about his new endeavors. Stay with us.
For this commercial break is brought to you by TaxStar, and this track is called Third Degree Rug Burns.
The Academy Opus Cassius is the cheese industry's unique center for professional development, offering both practical and classroom training for cheese professionals ready to move their careers to the next level. The Academy is the only professional cheese school integrating hands-on practice, formal instruction, and curriculum-related visits in every course, and attracts students from such diverse countries as Australia, Venezuela, Ukraine, Canada, Sweden, Kenya, and India. Cheesemongering, cheesemaking, and affinage courses form the core curriculum. Sensory analysis training is practiced daily in every program. The Academy also offers insider's tours in New York, London, and Paris, where cheesemongers can meet their international peers and be inspired by different approaches to cheesemaking and retailing. In the United States, the Academy offers programs in California and Vermont. Our five-day program, Cheese From Pasture to Plate, will run in March 2017 in partnership with Point Reyes Farmstead Cheese and Cowgirl Creamery. The Life of Cheese in 4 Days in June 2017 is our ongoing partnership with Jasper Hill Farm. Both of these hands-on courses are perfect for students preparing for the ACS Certified Cheese Professional Exam. Enrollment is open now, and space is limited to 10. For more information and to apply for this and other courses, visit our website at academymons.com. That's academie-mons.com.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd, broadcasting live in the Heritage Radio Network. This is your host, Greg Blaze. We have Will Imre, Sales and Development Manager at Pondini, on the line. And we were just talking about getting into cheesemongering. On this half of the show, I wanted to talk about your current job for Pondini doing sales. Can you tell us a little more about Pondini and how you found that job?
Yeah, so the company itself has existed for pretty much over 13 years right now.
Oh man, I lost you. I can barely hear you. If you're somewhere away, come close. If you're somewhere close, go away.
Can you hear me now, Greg?
You're like through a tin cup.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
It's a super bad connection. Hold on. Are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
All right, much better, much better. Thanks, Will. Sorry. What's up with Pondini? How did you get that job?
Yeah, so basically I knew Seymour by working with him while I was operating my food business, buying cheese from him. I had an organic kind of focused company, and so, yeah, I bought some cheese, and he's the kind of guy that, you know, he didn't care about the minimums and stuff, and a lot of larger distributors at the time kind of didn't allow me to, you know, to work with them just because of, I couldn't meet that minimum. So, yeah, I mean, and when I tasted his cheeses, he had some of the best cheese around, you know, Italian cheeses. The company itself existed for about 13, has been existed for about 13 years. It was founded by Seymour Pond, Matteo Panini. He started importing Parmigiano. So, it's, yeah, pretty crazy.
That's awesome, dude. What has been the, you know, we discussed about, you know, what you miss about the counter, but what have been the challenges of moving away from the counter and into that job? Maybe it was none, but I bet you there were some.
I think there are some, yeah. I think it's obviously, I learned a lot under your tutelage, I can say. I mean, you're a fantastic mentor. So, I mean, you were the kind of person that kind of, you know, it's, you have a management philosophy that actually supports, like, individuals' freedoms to grow. And you kind of like, you know, you let people participate in many roles behind that counter. And it's not just about selling cheese. You know, you got to do a lot of that. But, you know, whether it was inventory management, new product procurement, sales tracking, all that, you were awesome at allowing people that wanted to do that to do it and help you out.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
And I think those experiences really translated into my position. So, I mean, if I didn't have that, I think it would have been a kind of a less easy transition. But because I did build those skills at Eataly, I think it was a little easier. So, I mean, it's basically the same thing. It's just kind of learning the kind of ebbs and flows, the standard operating procedures of the company. I'm a pretty quick learner with that stuff. So,
sure.
you know, it worked out well for me. But it was still challenging. Again, you're building a company now. You're with, an owner. They have expectations. It's their, you know, even though it's only two people, you know, I think it's, you know, you got to understand that it is their company. Sometimes you get a little excited and maybe a little overwhelmed because you invest so much into it. So those are some of the challenges I think in the beginning that I had, but, coming to the realization that, you know, we're working together as a team, we're going to get this done and we're going to continue to grow. It's a great feeling. So,
what have been the challenges of helping to build his brand specifically, you know, along with him?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's again, the controlled and calculated response. We want to make concessions to bring new cheeses in. We want to make concessions in forming partnerships with people. But, you know, it has to be under the right conditions. I think that, you know, that is definitely a challenge to building the brand. And then also you have in the industry these days such an increase in demand. So for us,
definitely.
We work with such small farmstead producers, it's like we got to watch out for quality control. We got to watch out for inventory management. We have to communicate to our producers, you know, look, we're going to have a spike, you know, can you handle this, et cetera, you know, so we can actually have cheese to sell. You know, we're doing something a little different since we are working, you know, with predominantly farmstead producers in Europe. That's tough. I mean, you know, I think our largest herd size is like 2,000, you know, for one of our producers. So you're not getting a lot of cheese. And they have to not only satisfy our marketplace, they have to satisfy their own as well.
Completely.
So I think that's, you know, that's very, 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 very challenging. And then, you know, obviously we're trying to be an incubator for them, so we want to keep business up for them as well. So they can expand if they want to. You know,
well,
that's one of
their goals. Tough with small producers there because you wonder, you know, they have a small amount of cheese, and of that small amount of cheese, a portion of it is good, and a portion of it is, it's not like it's less, it's not like it's bad, but there's, you know, there's the best of the best, you know, and then there's the other stuff, and you have to get a little bit of both of that, I think, as the importer, but you also don't want to, you know, the stuff that's super fragile, you know, you want them to keep around and sell close to where they make it, you know, because it doesn't really make the trip. But, you know, when they end up sending you some of that, you run into a problem, you know, because, you know, you don't know exactly what you're getting. Or at least that was my experience. But, I mean, those are all just challenges. I kind of like to help work that stuff out. You know, I feel like the better you get to know your producers, especially small producers, you know the times in the year when they don't have a lot of milk or they don't have a lot of help, you know, and you're not going to get a lot of cheese out of them or your quality is going to be a little different. You know what I mean? It's
yeah, and I think those are huge challenges. And I, for international stuff, I think it's more. I think that they've been making cheese for such a long time. I think it's more consistent. But I think for our domestic producers, and that's part of the business I'm kind of building. I find that more often. We want to make concessions, and we want to make sure. That we help them as best as possible. But again, we don't want to sacrifice that quality, and we want to provide the best possible cheese. And not only that, we want to provide cheese to people that the producers intended to provide to people, So we don't, we watch our numbers very closely. We don't take a lot on. We want, first in, first out, implemented as quickly as possible, and then go on to the next order. But there have been those challenges with domestic producers, I find, more than our international. But we don't have a large catalog, so we're not doing a lot of soft-ripened stuff from overseas.
Yeah,
we're not
a question doing about that.
It's different. We have 40 to 60 cheeses at most, and most of them are aged.
Where do the American ones fit little, in? So you have your Italian producers, and I understood them all to be organic producers, right? They're all
say about 95% of all our producers are certified organic.
That was like a profile of cheese that you guys have, and that you build your brand on. Where do the American cheeses fit into that profile?
That's another area where we had to make some concessions. So what we did was, I was previously at ECS this year, and I think there's such a great demand for finding new domestic producers right now that I think it's very integral that we kind of stay competitive in that marketplace.
Sure.
So for me it was like, all right, what are your practices? If I tasted a good cheese, and most of the American producers that I talked to, they're free-range, antibiotic-free, non-GMO feed for their cattle, small herds. If it's not farmstead and they're sourcing from a local dairy, they're either animal welfare approved or kind of abide by those guidelines, just because it's just a natural way of doing things, and they believe in those processes to work for them. So I think when we sat down and we thought about it, Seymour and I, it was kind of a thing where we're like, okay, well, I mean, they just can't pay for the certification. I think that's where the problem lies. They just don't have enough money for it, or they want it. They don't have enough money for it. They don't have enough time to do paperwork and all red tape and all that jazz. So we were like, all right, let's make the concession. Let's see how we like this cheese. It kind of sticks to our core values, even though it's not certified. Let's try it out. And we've had success, which has been good.
That's awesome. Selling cheese is good. That's what you want to do. And then finally, I want to ask you, do you have any advice for folks looking for non-cheesemonger jobs who want to stay in cheese?
You can email me at will@pondini.com.
Nice.
And if you want to do some work with us, let us know. keep forging ahead, and make sure you love what you do. I think that's most important. The progression, you will know when it's time to make that transition. I think if you're in this industry and you're in it for life, you know it. And whenever you're comfortable with making the transition, whether it be to sales or to owning your own farmstead, to becoming a cheesemaker, whatever it may be, or working for ECS or another distributor, whatever it is, in whatever capacity, you're going to know when it's time to make that transition, and just be confident in your abilities, and if you're passionate about it, it'll all work out for you.
Well said, my man. Well said. So I want to say thanks for tuning in to Cutting the Curd, and thanks to Will for coming on. Thank you so much, Will. You're the man. Love you.
Oh, thanks, man. You're the man, dude.
Tune in next week for more Cutting the Curd. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Heritage_Radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.